the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, where every time I start the stream, I'm off center. My name is Joey, here with my co-host, Len, who is also now following the rule of thirds for photography.
Yes.
We're having too much fun here. We got an interview today with a man who you may not know, but you're going to know him well by the end of the program. Mark Sinclair is the COO of CoinShack. But before we start, as always, Len, who we sponsored by ShakePay. The best place for Canadians to buy and sell, although you should never sell Bitcoin. They got three things going on. We talk about these three things all the time. We hope that you guys will check them out, okay? The first one is Shaking Sats. You sign up with our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, and all you have to do is shake your phone every morning. They'll just give you free sats. You can't get free sats anywhere anymore. Anyone who tells you that you can get free sats, it's usually like a scam bot of a scantily dressed Asian woman asking how your trade's going. Okay, this is we are not scantily clad, nor are we Asian women. Okay, what's that?
It goes smoothly.
My trade's always going smoothly. The markets are always treating me well. It's always my answer. So you get the free sats. Okay, that's pretty good. Good start. Then you got the sats back card. You spend off of your CAD balance out of ShakePay with like your tap or whatever. You just hit them with the quick boop at the store. They give you 2% back on everything you buy. Now, as if that wasn't good enough, item number three. Sometimes they just comp you the purchase. They just give it to you. Shake paid. Free money, free sats. It's all good. CBP is the promo code. Use them, enjoy them, love them. They sponsor the show. We appreciate their support. So without further ado, Len, we're bringing on Mark, who's also added his Twitter handle here. I don't know why his Twitter handle is this because, I mean, your last name is not that hard to say, is it? Sinclair? What's his face in there? Like, so what's with the L, what's his face?
Poor attempt at OPSEC. When I started Twitter, I was like, I'm going to be someone anonymous. And now I'm like, actually, look at me on a podcast.
We know who you are now.
Good for you. Good for you. Okay, so Mark, tell us. I gave you a bit of an intro there, but as always, the guests always do a better job introducing themselves than I do. So tell us who you are, what you're about. Let's hear it.
Cool. I am Mark Sinclair. I'm from the CoinShack. We are a physical-based store in Toronto where you can come in and buy some Bitcoin with cash or sell some Bitcoin for cash. We also offer debit. We have an online component as well that does e-transfers. We're totally non-custodial, so we never hold any money for anyone. You come in or you go online, we scan your QR code or take your Bitcoin address directly and send the Bitcoin right to you.
I like that. The non-custodial thing, eh, Len? Underappreciated in the space.
Well, I want to know a little bit more about you, Mark. Let's hear about your journey to get into the world of Bitcoin, because that's going to dictate how we're going to be talking to you today. So, yeah, let's hear your journey so we could really dive into this one.
So back in 2013-ish, I think, I was teaching swimming, and my plan was to start my own swim school, so nothing technology related at all. But I always loved computers. I was in Seneca for computer programming, but I dropped out of that because they were teaching me stuff that the banks wanted them to teach me, and it was like old technology. And when I found out that they literally have contracts with the banks to teach old technology, so that way their students can go work for the banks and the banks never need to update their stuff. And once I found that out, I was like, this is a huge waste of my time. I'm done. So I dropped out. Shortly after that, I found Bitcoin, read the white paper. I'm a big libertarian. I hate the government. So it clicked fairly quickly. And I was like, this is amazing. This is like the exit that I need from the system. And then within six months, I'd quit my job and I started trading Bitcoin on local Bitcoins. And that's where I met my business partners. And then we eventually turned that into the store.
This guy, okay, wait a minute. So you've done some Seinfeld-esque yada yada there, I would say. you didn't just meet your business partners and turn it into a store. How did that happen? Who are your business partners? You met them, you know, you meet them, and then you don't just get a cocktail and a Caesar one day and decide, like, we're going to fire up a physical Bitcoin store. What is the process there? Why did you choose to go that route?
Before, when we were just trading on local Bitcoins, it was basically like we were Bitcoin drug dealers, where we'd meet people in restaurants, in their cars. And we'd have to count physical cash in a restaurant and be very, like, inconspicuous about it all. And like, if you're meeting someone new, you got to be like, who is this person? Are they safe? Are they going to rob me? And so over time you develop a network of people you really, really trust. So me and my partners were just really, really trusted each other. And we had all built up like little networks amongst each other, of people who traded through us. And so as, unfortunately, as regulation came to Canada, and was making it more difficult to just trade on the fly peer to peer, we decided to open up the store and go legit, and become fully regulated and see if we can grow.
Based on your topics there about trust and verifying, I want to know a little bit more about the relationship between an exchange, a Bitcoin exchange, and the OSC, because this is something that we talked about in the past, but we would like to dive more into it right now. So if you
I cannot speak to that, unfortunately, because we are not regulated by the OSC. That's one of the reasons we only work with Bitcoin.
Wait a minute. What? You're operating on the fringes, man. Are you kidding?
Yeah, we're non-custodial and we're Bitcoin only. So we don't deal in securities. We don't deal in any investment contracts or loan contracts or whatever fancy words they use for custodial exchanges now. We're regulated by FinTrack, and that's it.
Riddle me this. So FinTrack is a must no matter what you're doing, basically. If you're an institution that deals in, I think, what is it, money transmission of any kind,
you've got to pay by that, right? And you're dealing in any kind of money transmission, you need to be an MSB by FinTrack.
Okay. So Len, don't kill me for saying this because I know we don't want to like burn bridges, but when we were a little more green, the two of us, on the show anyway, we had a couple of exchanges on that really celebrated regulated like becoming part of a regulatory ecosystem. They registered with certain bodies and they would put out these news releases. They're the first to register with certain bodies, et cetera, et cetera. You've chosen to go a different route here, right? I don't want to say you chose that route, but it seems to me you've made a decision to not pursue those other avenues, right? So the question I have for you is what do you think the exchanges that go that route are getting wrong, if anything, number one? And number two, Is it sort of a false veneer of legitimacy that these institutions are granting the exchanges? Do you think most investors care about that, or is it really just a nice press release and not much else?
I think, and you hit it on the head with the word investors. So I think it all depends on the mentality you come into the space with. So we're totally self-funded. We have no investor money. It's just us. Three friends got together and we started to do this. We all have great knowledge and good skills. And so our goal in that sense is, I lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry. What was the question about?
I mean, it's because Slack is buzzing in the background. This guy's, he's managing an exchange where people come to, he's one of like four guys. He's trying to do an interview. The operation's running in the background.
I remember now. So it's the mindset, you know? So you can go in and what it does attract investors is following all the rules and getting all the badges and all the stickers that say you're part of this organization or that organization. But from my experience, those organizations don't do much. Aside from maybe convince the public you're slightly more legitimate than what you are, but I believe time can solve for that problem as well. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you about the non-custodial part. And I think that's, you're kind of hanging your hat on that as being one of what you, something you do as a compared to other exchanges. And it seems to me that a new person that's getting into the space, it's easier for them just to get into an exchange that does allow for custodial services because they don't want to deal with the hassles of a wallet and all that jazz. So how do you manage to deal with the newer person? Because it seems to be it's a steep learning curve to learn about the wallet, how to store your wallet, the keys, and all that. So how do you deal with that? And I'm just curious, like, what's the process there?
So when we originally started the store, the whole idea of the physical store was you can speak to someone face to face. It's much like a bank branch experience. So you can even come into the store, register for our online exchange in the store, like you're opening up a bank account, and then go home and trade online and do whatever you want online. On top of that, you can come in the store with no Bitcoin wallet and we can, recommend a wallet on your phone. You can go download it. No personal information needed.
This is so badass. Like, is this not badass? I gotta say, like, because I don't want to cut you off, Mark. I want you to finish. But like, this is really Len. Like, we talked about this the other day about Luna, off that track, about how the education piece is missing for new people, and that's why people get roped into Luna. And now here you are now. people are coming in and you're telling them what wallet to download and presumably like guiding them through the process. It's good shit, man. It is good shit. Please continue.
Yeah. So what I was going to say, we make sure that they write down their 12 words. Obviously, we make sure we don't record those 12 words in any way. They literally take a pen and paper. We have little cards that we printed out with the 12 like that. If you ever got a ledger, you know what those look like. So we give them that. We make sure we tell them put it somewhere safe. These are your Bitcoin. Anyone who gets it, yada yada yada, all that spiel. And then the other big thing is people getting scammed. So lots of people we find come into the store and they're just falling for scams, whether it's a romance scam, some Ponzi scheme, or whatever it may be. And we can usually pick up on that pretty well because they usually have to scroll through some WhatsApp conversation to get their QR code. And they usually don't know what Bitcoin is at all. And so we get a chance to try and talk them out of it or try and talk them into giving less, which is something they don't get at all from custodial exchanges. Custodial exchanges are just like, yo, give us your money. We'll take your money. We don't care. Yeah.
Joey, I got just one quick question, just a follow-up. Yeah. What are some of the wallets that you recommend, both the hardware and the ones that are hosted on a phone? I'm just curious what's recommended.
Right now, we only recommend Exodus just because we think it's just a super simple, easy-to-use wallet. And that's basically just it.
Okay.
This is righteous. So we've given some dap to other like exchange guys who have come on, even the ones I didn't really, you know that much about. And I got to say, like, you guys have a pretty good little education page there, Mark. Like, there's a lot of stuff there. The white paper is there, the how it works. Like, it's all like the Eli 5. It's the how to get a wallet. What is Bitcoin? It's everything. It's the network stats.
We're all about understanding Bitcoin and like self-custodial, like being your own bank. We're really big on that idea.
So, okay, isn't it? This is maybe business on air. Okay, so I think about the mechanism through which an exchange like ShakePay makes money, right? And I consider them to be a good exchange. I think they're a great positive influence in the space. I think there's others that are like them, maybe not to the point that they are. But I look at the way they make money, and it's, you know, they have a really clean phone app that gets you coming back to the app over and over again. They have like the card and stuff. Eventually, they'll maybe add other functionality. How do you guys really pull in dollars? Because it seems to me that you're kind of pushing people to become self-sovereign, which is very much part of the Bitcoin mission, but antithetical, at least in my view, maybe I'm wrong about that, to the making money as an exchange mission. So how do you guys walk that line? What's the balance there for you guys?
Our whole idea is that if we can provide people a super simple, streamlined, easy to use solution, they'll keep coming back, and then we'll just rely on volume in terms of making money. So we just make money. Like, people are buying Bitcoin directly from us, not from other people. So we sell it, or we buy at a lower price, sell at a higher price. So we make our own money in between. Very simple model. And yeah, as long as people have a super simple way of, like, from us, for example, with the store, walk in, if it's under $1,000, there's no ID needed. You can be out with Bitcoin in your wallet within 5 minutes.
Under $1,000, you don't take ID, nothing.
Yeah, yeah. You don't need any ID at all for under $1,000.
Is that a FinTrack?
Unreal.
Yeah, that's a FinTrack regulation.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true, actually. If you try and transfer out on exchange land, like anything under 1,000, right? They don't ask you where it's going.
Yeah, you'll see that $1,000 number everywhere. And likewise, though, if you want to register with us, again, that takes 5 minutes. It's as simple as filling out a form, opening up a bank account, and then, you know, no different than under $1,000, give us some cash, we'll count the cash, scan QR code. We send the coins out directly from a hot wallet, so there's no wait time at all in terms of getting your coins, unlike withdrawal times from custodial exchanges, which are always a mystery. Yeah.
Do you find that the walk-ins and just the sheer volume you're dealing with, is it in conjunction with the price of Bitcoin? So as the price of Bitcoin goes down, are you experiencing less volume of people coming in?
Yeah. And likewise, like, at the peak bubble, when the Doge and SHIB nonsense were happening, and like every third person coming in the store was like, yo, do you guys sell Doge? How do I get Doge?
No.
How do I? And they're like, they like
put the sign on the door, man. Yeah, like, no.
Binance isn't in Ontario anymore. But when Binance was in Ontario, they'd shove their Binance account in our face and be like, how do I get Doge? I have some Doge on here. Now, how can I sell it to you? Can you have, like, they have no idea how to use the exchanges. They just somehow managed to load money onto this account and they're just stuck with it.
So, okay, you mentioned earlier that you do not deal in securities. I like that strong language. Hot take early out of you. That's really good base running, I would say, for your first step out on the show. Talk to me about the rationale from a compliance point of view, why not deal in Ethereum? Everyone else deals in Ethereum, including show sponsor ShakePay. I wish they did not, but they do. They deal in Ethereum. So why have you chosen not to? Both from an ethos for the, you know, the Coin Shack, and also if you can, I don't know, you know, how much guidance you can give on a program like this, but you know, from a compliance perspective, why not deal in Ethereum when everyone else is?
So that choice is not really more of a compliance choice. That choice is more of a personal choice and B, a money choice. Like I said, we're self-funded, so we're not a big company. So the way our business model works, it's just easy to do right now one coin. We are partnering with a crypto to crypto exchange, and we're going to add a little tool to our website for those who are registered, so that they can buy Bitcoin from us and then convert it into something else, or they can convert something into Bitcoin to then sell to us. So it's kind of a solution to that. Over time, we're not against other coins personally. I'm not against other people owning other things. I think the free market is the way to go. But we'd definitely be limited in what we would support. If anything, it would be like the ideal coin that I would want to add right now is the USDT, a stable coin, just because that's the easiest way to get in and out of the market without like volatility. But even USDT is considered a security by the OSC.
I think we actually talked about that. That's always been interesting.
USDT is the only stable coin considered a security by the OSC as well.
Why is that? What is your guess on that?
I don't know, man. It doesn't fall into like a security definition at all. No one buys it hoping that it's going to go up in price.
From 99.95 to 99.97.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, USDT now you could argue maybe that's changed, but...
I'm curious, what are your thoughts on something like BISC, a decentralized exchange? Because it kind of fits in with the model that you have, except it's just more online. And I'm curious if your customers tend to use that as well as using your services over at your store.
No one really uses BISC from my experience. Not for fiat to Bitcoin.
Anymore. Oh my God, Len, I got to go get some milk. That's absolute spicy Szechuan take. No one uses BISC. Talk to me more.
They may use it for crypto to crypto, but from my end, I don't think I've ever met a single person. And I used to advertise back in BISC back in the day for fiat to crypto. Never got a single hit.
Really?
Yeah, but I also think that unfortunately, as governments get a little more stringent and more strict, trading in person for cash gets more and more risky, because the moment you exchange more than $1,000 with someone twice, now it's like a business you're doing it, and you're not just a one-off transaction. If it's a government official, they'll be like, I'm sorry, you're breaking the law now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fine you. So the risk just goes up and up. And so for that reason, I think, unfortunately, P2P gets harder.
Go ahead, Len.
It's really quick. So the $1,000 limit, is that per day? Or, I mean, how does this work? I'm curious. Like,
that's the same question I have. Oh, sorry. How do you guys deal with that limit?
And that is a very kind of gray area, in my opinion, because the way it's worded in the law is it's $1,000 per transaction, which means, and Bull Bitcoin, you'll see, does this. Bull Bitcoin says you can do multiple transactions in a day under $1,000. So it's surprising. A very gray area. I don't know why they phrased it like that. but they did. In 24 hours, the rule is $10,000. If you collect $10,000 in either crypto or cash for within 24 hours, broken up however many transactions, you have to collect their identity.
That seems to me like the – I mean – I don't want to call it dumb. It is dumb.
It is dumb.
But it is dumb. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a dumb rule, especially if, you know, a company as big as Bull is, it sounds like, just telling people, like, if you want to skirt this, here's how you skirt it. Like, send us, you know, 10 of these transactions.
Bull skirts some rules with their CAD stablecoin, their gift vouchers.
That's right. Yeah.
But so you can redeem under $1,000 worth of those multiple times a day, and you don't need to KYC yourself on Bull. But you need to find a way to get those vouchers without being KYC.
So, okay, what is the next step then for regulation for the industry? I know that's a big question, but
for regulation, those are two different.
Well, I mean, from the regulatory side, this is eventually going to get captured, is it not? Like, this $1,000 loophole, there's no way that's going to last 2 years. Yeah. So what are they going to do? What is the plan? And how do you guys, as a cash exchange, as far as I can tell, the only one in the country, Alan, like, is there another one that's run like this?
I don't know of anything that's remote.
I mean, we've talked to a lot of people, big and small, and you're the only person I know with a storefront where you can just walk in with a couple $100 and get Bitcoin and leave. So how do you guys combat what's sure to be like a tightening vice grip around operations that run like you guys do?
It all depends on the regulation around cash. So if we go towards cashless society, obviously that would affect us. Mm-hmm. And then it also, I think, I don't see it getting much worse other than them fixing that $1,000 loophole eventually, because of, unfortunately, Bitcoin has terrible privacy. And so, like, we have to scan every Bitcoin transaction that comes into our store, and it gets a ranking. And if something falls below a certain ranking, then we need to go and notify the government about it because it's suspicious. And every Bitcoin company has to do this. They all have to prove that they're somehow monitoring transactions coming in and out for fraud and for other stuff.
So do you guys have a way, like, I remember we talked to, I think it was Jordan Anderson that said this, Aylin. They have like an in-house mechanism for determining risk for the accounts that they have. And they obviously don't publish it. It's like proprietary. Do you guys have something similar that you use?
Yeah. So we have a system in place that measures risk based off the transactions and the clients and stuff like that. And we needed all that to get a bank account, which is a whole other conversation if you want to have, because it took us 2 years for us to get a bank account.
So let's have it, because we just went through that too.
We don't have money behind us. We don't have like big players behind us or anything like that. So we had to just hop bank to bank until eventually some credit union would give us a chance.
So what rationale did they give you then, Mark? Like, I mean, you guys are running a business. I know it's Bitcoin focused. Surely after dealing with that as an entrepreneur, you've got some war stories to tell. What was that process like?
Of getting the bank account?
Yeah, man.
Oh, it was just constant rejection. Rejection at all levels. People being like, oh yeah, we'll work with Bitcoin. And then they toss it up to the higher levels being like, oh, actually, no, we don't work with Bitcoin at all. So the banks aren't really the war stories. The real war stories are advertising. So we can't advertise on any platform because we're a crypto exchange. And unfortunately, everyone in the world sees Bitcoin as the same as all cryptocurrency. So being a Bitcoin only exchange is no different than like being an ICO shitcoin exchange in the eyes of like Google, Facebook, Twitter, and all those guys. So Google won't give us advertising permission unless we're with the OSC. And obviously we're not with the OSC, and that costs a lot of money to go with the OSC and more regulatory burden on us. So we're not going to do that. Facebook now lets us advertise. Twitter won't let us advertise. Reddit won't let us advertise. So we're like super limited in everything we can do.
Who's making those decisions?
Len's connecting dots in his head right now, big time. That advertising.
Oh, yeah.
I had not heard that advertising.
All these
before.
Companies
That's
are making
big.
These decisions themselves because they because it's finance. So it's super high risk because it's finance. And then just because of all the scams, unfortunately, in the space, they're like, we don't want to be associated with exposing people to what could be scams.
And Google just recently changed their minds on this because it wasn't not too long ago where they basically said they weren't going to advertise at all, but they turned about and did a 180. This must have been in the past 6 months, but man, if they're only dealing with OSC, it's really, I guess, limiting for people like you. So I'm wondering how much more time before there's enough people talking to their members of parliament, mm-hmm. enough to people talking to political people to see if we could get this changed. And because I'm sure that we could get this done on a more overarching type of thing, because, you know, we have this new bill that's talking about news, and it's any news sources, they have to then send a kickback to the originator. So there's got to be something out there that's going to impact you positively so that it would allow you to advertise your business, because to shut you out just because you're Bitcoin only and not OSC, it seems like rather asinine to me, but I'm not sure how we can rattle the cages.
We put our clients less at risk because we don't hold their money and we only offer Bitcoin and we can't advertise because
That seems asinine to me, but I don't know. But
okay, so what about like when you guys it just seems very strange to me that, you know, the same rails almost that you would be advertising on Google, Facebook, you know, whatever else, right? I know Facebook allows it now, but it seems very, very weird to me that certainly the government and its, we'll call them arm's length institutional pals, certainly they want to collect taxes from the business you're operating. I'm sure I have that right. But they won't let you promote the business in order to sort of increase that tax revenue. You said you're a libertarian. I'd like to talk a bit about that. And I think this is a good time to, you know, sort of get into that topic. What are we doing as far as, you know, promoting entrepreneurship, promoting business building in a space that's obviously growing? It's been expanding, you know, sort of exponentially now for the last 5 years. Where's the shortcoming here, in your opinion? Is it just the political machine is too slow? Is it incentives? Where are the problems?
that's like slowing adoption is what you're talking about, or
it's slowing everything by the sounds of it. Adoption is one thing, but like even you know, you're a guy who has the chops to build a business. Certainly you're more valuable to society as a business owner than you are a cog in a machine, let's say.
That's fair. Yeah. I definitely say, acceptance is one thing, but I think greed is the overall thing that's slowing it down, because greed is what creates all of the scams and all of the shit coins. And all of the shit coins and the scams are what give, like Luna, for example, UST, these overcomplicated, over-engineered solutions to problems that don't exist. They give everyone a bad name, and then they slow everything down. And all that engineering time that was spent on Luna, all these crazy, complicated algorithms that these very smart people, I'm sure they're very smart, came up with, could have been spent over here doing something of value rather than creating Luna and other shit coins over here. All the mental power that went into Dentacoin could have gone into making something great.
Well, they weren't rich themselves.
I haven't heard that name in like 3 years.
No, we talked about it recently.
I won't let it die.
We talked about Dentacoin recently. No, the thing is, they enriched themselves, and that's what it is. Shitcoins is all about, and that's where you come in as a Bitcoiner, that you are dealing with people that, first off, like entering the space. Giving them information, what is Bitcoin? You guys are doing a really good service to the community, because as long as you're able to do it and inform the people, what is Bitcoin? What it's all about? There's only a limited amount of supply. It's decentralized. You guys are doing everybody a fantastic service. When people come in and look at this, do you can see the light bulb like turn on in their head? Because every time I talk to people, I see it too. I'm wondering if you guys.
Oh, yeah. Just yesterday at the store, I was at the store and we were selling someone their first Bitcoin. Not a whole Bitcoin, but like, you know what I mean. And once they scan the QR code, and they're always like, I don't know if this is going to work. I'm kind of questioning everything. And then the coins just appear in their wallet. Like right once we say we sent it, and then the coins appear, they're like, holy cow. And then we tell them, you could have been anywhere in the world. We didn't need to know your name, your phone number, anything about you. We just needed that QR code. And that's all it takes. And then they kind of immediately get it.
So what are the questions you get the most at the store? I mean, you guys are dealing, it sounds like, with I don't know, Len, like you tell me what you think, but like if I was picturing the kind of client you get, Mark, I would say that I would expect you get the hardened Bitcoiner who wants to come in there and spend cash more than you get the new Bitcoiner who, you know, is sort of foregoing like a phone app or something that's like easier, maybe less secure. But it seems to me you're getting some mix of both. So what is the question you get the most from the newbie? Because I'd be curious, the newbie who makes it to you guys, I don't know how new they could possibly be, but I'd love to hear some of the stuff they ask you guys, some of the stuff they say to you. How did they make it to CoinShack, of all places, to buy their Bitcoin?
You'd be surprised how many people walk past a Bitcoin ATM and out of curiosity put $20 in. We're very similar. People walk past the store. They see a face inside the store, so they come inside just to talk. Most of the people, though, that are coming here have already heard of Bitcoin. They already know. They're already coming in with that idea. Most of the questions we get are unfortunately about shitcoins, probably, other than like scam related questions, are about shitcoins. How do I get this coin? How do I get that coin? What do you think of this coin? Or price questions? What's the price going to do? How low is it going to go? How high is it going to go? And I always tell people, one day the price of Bitcoin will be $1 million, but so will a loaf of bread. So you have to come first.
It's all relative.
Everyone, lots of people coming in just looking for answers, because that's what everyone's looking in the space for, just looking around for the easy answers.
In terms of when people come and buy Bitcoin from your store, I'm assuming it's all on chain. Are you offering, or will you be offering, anything from Lightning?
Yes, most likely. The next time fees go crazy, we'll probably get Lightning up and running. No one has really asked about it. We've actually had more people ask about Taproot addresses now than we've had asked about Lightning, which is surprising.
I'll say. This is what I mean. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like the hardened. If I was going to go to CoinShack or any place to buy Bitcoin with cash, I would have questions about privacy. What implementations are you using to make sure that this is as private as can possibly be? If I'm not KYCing, that's at least part of the equation. I'm surprised to hear people asking about Taproot. I've never even considered, honestly, like admission here.
It's like one or two guys. One or two really hardcore. not a majority by far. And then another group of questions is like, do I have to pay taxes on this? just like a question like this, or is this taxed?
I'm just kidding. So okay, the other thing I'd be curious about, Mark, since you're running a business, we talk a little bit on the show about how we find ourselves becoming nodes in our social circles for Bitcoin, right? And it's, I would say it's like not super hard for me to get someone to buy Bitcoin or a Bitcoin related equity now that they're pretty publicly available. Everyone kind of knows a little bit about Bitcoin, even if you don't know, you know, who Satoshi is or what the white paper is all about, all that stuff. But I think it'd be easier for you than most because you really got skin in the game. It's one thing for me to run a podcast where I shoot my mouth off a couple of times a week, but like your livelihood is dependent on the success of Bitcoin more than anything else, right? CoinShot can come or go probably even at some point. And if Bitcoin is okay, you're going to be okay. So what has that been like for you in your personal life? I'd be curious, or like with your family and stuff like that. Because I know for me, for a long time was an uphill battle and it's kind of evening out now. But for you, I would guess that you're, you know, people either look at you like you're nuts or they're sort of admiring your gusto. Like what is the mix there?
When I first got into Bitcoin, the immediate family, like mom, dad, was like, it's a Ponzi scheme. This was like back 2013, 2014. I was like, guys, you don't get it. If I buy this and more people buy it, we all get rich together. It's a guaranteed thing. It's going to happen. I promise you. And they were like, that's a scam. It's 100% scam. And then as time went on and I started trading on local Bitcoins and the price started to increase, my immediate family got it. But then I ran into the challenge of trying to describe what I do for a living to literally anyone else. So if anyone's like, what do you do for a living? I go, well, I trade Bitcoin. They don't know what that is. It's too early for them to really understand that. So I go, okay, well, I go around in, again, cars and restaurants, and I meet people, and I trade digital currencies for them. But now that I have the store, I can be like, well, actually, I have this store now, and it's all this business, and it's all fancy and stuff. So it's made it like, yeah, it's made what I have to say to people when I'm talking about Bitcoin a lot more legitimate, because I'm not just some weird guy meeting strangers in coffee shops.
Do you get people just hanging around?
That's a way better story.
I'm wondering, do you just get people coming in just to hang around and try to through osmosis, get information? I'm trying to envision what it's like over there.
Or you also get, especially during COVID, sadder side is you get like the loneliness. So someone will come in, they'll buy Bitcoin. And we have like a bookshelf type of thing set up in the store. And it's got an ASIC miner. It's got a little white paper booklet. It's got $100 trillion Zimbabwe bill. And it's got all these little doodads on it and stuff.
What kind of miner?
It's actually the first Dash miner that I bought years ago. I couldn't even tell you what it's called. But you'll see that once we're done the transaction, they kind of just wander around the store, looking at things, trying to make small talk, because they have no one else in their lives to talk about this stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, now that COVID's done, we can have meetups again, like me and Len met up at a couple weeks ago. And the Coin Shack is actually now sponsoring a meetup in Toronto called the Bitcoin Bay. That meets every other Monday.
Yo, that's sick. That's sick. So what's the experience been like in meetups? I've yet to go to a meetup because, between like athletic injuries, COVID, et cetera, et cetera. What's the energy like at the meetup for you guys?
I love you.
Okay, so when you go, I guess the logical question would be, when you go, do you go as a promoter or do you go as a community member? What do you like? How are you there? What are you doing there?
Usually starts off as a promoter, and then as the drinks go on, I end up as a community member. Usually shitting on someone's coin that they're trying to make. On the latest Monday, I was shitting on metaverses and telling people why that was a bad idea.
Well, go on. I want to hear your thoughts on the metaverse. Why it's shitting?
Can we get the floor here?
Okay, yeah. So get this. There's an infinite amount of property, and it's easily copyable, and people are somehow going to pay for that.
My favorite metaverse commentary, like the backlash, easiest counter argument is like, people are always saying the metaverse is it's going to take off in value. You're not going to be able to get this property. Like, bro, that's already what it's like for real life property. Why would I want that for virtual property too? What kind of game are we playing here? How stupid do you think I am?
Visual is like, you can do anything, anywhere, anytime. You're not combined, but you're not bound by the limits of physical space.
So I guess I can come to your store and get NFTs.
Oh yeah, of course. My store will be in the metaverse and you can come there and buy all the NFTs.
Awesome. So okay. So this is sort of a new. You just told us this. What did you call it? The Bay Bitcoin Bay.
Bitcoin Bay. Yeah, it's the longest running meetup in Canada. I'm surprised you guys never heard of it.
We're doing our podcast, buddy.
Or Toronto. I can't remember, but they've been running since like 2015, I think.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's that all about? How did that get started? How did you get involved with that?
Well, I met those guys just when I found Bitcoin. I was just looking to meet like-minded people. So I went to their meetup one day and I met like-minded people and I just stuck around. They're cool guys. It's basically,
was this the one that was held? And this was held at that restaurant that the couple ended up closing shop and moving to Caribbean? Is that the one I'm thinking of, or am I wrong?
They've had a few locations over the years, but that one sounds familiar. Like that might have been one of them.
Okay.
Now they're at Rex's near a Bay in Dundas.
Okay. And there's also a meetup.
It's every other month, you said?
They meet up every other Monday.
Oh. Joey, we got to do a podcast over there. Holy what do you shit, say we do man. A road trip? That one. Man, like,
One thing I've been blown away by, because I was just a Twitter, a Twitter hothead when we first started the show. One thing I've been blown away by is everyone has a different meetup to talk about. Either it's something they do with their buddies every month or every 2 months. It's something like, Bitcoin Bay, where you're talking to guys every other week. There's the Innocente one, right? That I think everyone knows about. It's like the Southern Ontario hub. And then you guys met at a Whippy one. What was that? Was that Tahini's Whippy?
No, it was sponsored by Tahini's, I think.
And ShakePay,
yeah. And then it was, I don't know who hosted it, though. I never met the guys that hosted it either. I never heard of them before that meetup.
See, this is the kind of thing that I only found out about when we started doing the show. Because to me, like you said, Mark, like I think for a lot of people, this is part of a lot of Orange Pill stories too. I know it's part of mine. For a lot of others, I would guess you get into Bitcoin and you want to understand it. You're like on the cusp. You're on the precipice of really getting it. On the precipice of getting hard money. Why government shouldn't have a hand in currency? Things of that nature. But then you can't light the fuse on the dynamite because no one else is around to talk about it with, to share experiences with and all that stuff. The meetups are so important for that. Twitter's so important for that. Having friends, content and whatever that's aligned with that mission statement is huge.
And Joey, you lose steam when you're by yourself too. You could be full of, all this. But yeah, I mean, go on. Sorry, I just wanted to.
No, that's it. Mark, what were you going to say? It's important. That's all.
No, I agree with you completely. Like I joined Twitter – like the crypto Twitter space, after I started going to meetups. So like my first introduction into the Bitcoin space and Bitcoin community was through like the physical world, in real life. And that's what I always love too. I love talking to people face to face. And I find at meetups still, it's mostly new people that are coming. It's people who are curious and they just come out just to see who's coming out, to ask questions, to see what's going on.
Do you find that? The people that go to these Bitcoin meetups, and I've been to a few of them, how do they differ for the people coming into your store? The people at the meetups, I would assume that they have much more knowledge about the game. They have much more skin in the game as well. But is that the case? Or are people coming to your store that do all already have knowledge about Bitcoin and they understand that they just want to buy it? So I'm just curious.
Probably what's the similar mix, to be honest with you. Yeah. Like there's some people that come in, they have a very good understanding of Bitcoin. They know exactly what it is and what they're doing with it. And there's other people that come in and they have no idea what they're doing with it. They're just trying to chase the latest shitcoin trend. So it's all over the place.
Being in Toronto, I would guess that much like many other, sort of cultural phenomena, Bitcoin is one of many sort of draws people have to crypto, let's say. Are you guys finding both from the, from the side of the meetup and from the side of CoinShack that you're getting more and more competition from adjacent, I don't want to call them assets, but like adjacent tokens or whatever, or adjacent meetups that are looking to both sort of compete with you for attendance and dollars in the case of your business, and also sort of really, really presenting as like combative with you guys? Because it seems to me like if I look at on Twitter, the number of people who want to dunk on Bitcoin every time another coin rips 40-50% upward while Bitcoin is sitting at like 3% for the week or something like that, these people are insufferable, they're innumerable, and they're loud as all hell. And I wonder if it's like that for you guys too, from both the meetup side and the business side. Are you seeing this more and more, or are you sort of like, ignoring it? What's that story?
I don't experience too much of the in-your-face-ness of it. Definitely people come in pushing their shitcoins on us sometimes, not often, or they're telling us about, oh man, you got to get in on this. You got to do it now. It's the greatest thing, blah, 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 blah. But I actually don't get too much of that. Even at the meetups, you don't get too much of that. It's usually just, it's usually more of like a point of curiosity. Oh, I've heard of this coin. Have you heard of this coin? What do you think of this coin? Unless you actually have someone like, again, the metaverse guy I was talking to at the meetup on Monday. Hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. If he does, I'm sorry. But he's got a company that just pumps out metaverses, and he was telling me, bro, one day Nike's going to have their own metaverse. Adidas is going to have their own metaverse. McDonald's going to have their own metaverse. And I'm like, this sounds like a terrible future. I don't understand why anyone would want to be a part of this. Yeah, I want to go to a mall where every store is owned by Nike. That sounds like
people
great
are sick. Place. They're sick.
It's going to be awesome eating virtual fries from McDonald's. I can't wait to not.
Hey, buddy, the fries are already fake. We don't have to wait for the metaverse to eat fake fries. You can go eat them over there right now.
Right. At one point, he was like, "Oh, I met up at my gym. I met up at the gym with my friend in the metaverse." And I was like, "That sentence alone is so absurd."
Guys are fucked, man.
I'm curious what's next for CoinShack, because you're not going to, I assume you're not going to just stand pat in just the one store. And I would assume you'd be growing further. I'm curious what's next for you guys, and if you could lay out some of the plans and give us some insight. What's happening?
So right now, the plan is just to try and grow online a little bit to try and generate some income. We want to try and open up stores across Canada, like ideally one in BC, one in Calgary, one on the East Coast kind of deal. To give people across the country a chance to be able to come in, register, blah, 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 and do their trades. But I'd love to have a dollar cost averaging product involved. So like a subscription Bitcoin model, where every month you give this much money in return for Bitcoin automatically. What else have we talked about? It's more just about like other easy ways of buying Bitcoin. Oh, another one, we're in talks with another company now. Where basically you'd log in on our website on your phone, say, I want to buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. It would generate a barcode. You walk into one of thousands of convenience stores across Canada and they scan that barcode, give them $100 cash. And then that essentially, then you buy Bitcoin with that $100. The convenience store owner doesn't even need to know you're buying Bitcoin as long as they can scan that QR code, as long as they're part of the network of convenience stores in this that this company works with.
And this is something you want to start? This is the first time I've heard that as an idea, I think.
Well, not start, but we would utilize another company's existing technology and just incorporate it into like buying and selling. We're not selling a Bitcoin, but buying Bitcoin.
I like this. You know what I really want from a DCA perspective? And Bull kind of does this, but maybe you guys can jump the gun on them. How come I can't just like have a direct sort of like line where you pull from my bank account and DCA with it every week or every 2 weeks?
That's what we want to be able to do. We want to basically do a PAD, which is a pre-authorized debit agreement. So yeah, we would pull money from your bank account every X amount of time that you decide, minute, hour, day, week, month. And then you'd give us a Bitcoin address. You could change the Bitcoin address at any time. But once we pull the money, we just immediately send Bitcoin out to that address. So again, we never hold any funds for you. And you just look at your wallet and every day you just receive Bitcoin.
I like this.
Mining. Actually, almost like you're mining. That's a good... good marketing point.
I like this a lot. Okay, so are you guys doing, I mean, from the privacy side, very important, obviously, we talk about privacy a lot on the show, and people who are listening, watching, whether you're new to Bitcoin or not, you should be taking care of your privacy, your UTXOs and all that, all the heuristics. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be looking at this stuff before you know it. So are you guys doing any CoinJoin background stuff with privacy tools when you send out? As a non-custodial exchange, you can send right away. You can do mixing, I guess, if you really want. What are you guys doing? And if you're not doing mixing, is it because you're worried about crackdowns or don't want to draw attention? What's the issue?
It's really just personal choice to not mix. We don't really see the need to right now. We get the philosophy behind it, but we personally just don't see the need to. And then me personally, I'm worried about crackdowns in the future of mixing not being able to be accepted anymore at exchanges. That's why I am not a Bitcoin maximalist. I am a Monero holder as well, because I'm a
wait big, a minute.
Who, I'm a big, I'm a privacy what? First guy, a freedom first guy.
It's a good opportunity here because we got a couple of friends who are Monero guys as well.
And one we dubbed with Manny Monero, in fact.
Yeah, Manny Monero. Yeah, yeah, whose name is not Manny or Manny Monero, but still a great moniker for the online presence. Give me the case for Monero. I think a lot of people have this inclination to hold some because it's the, you know, quote unquote, the privacy coin of choice. I think it's only second on black or dark web markets to Bitcoin, right? As far as usage. So
if it's not first now, it's definitely second. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the case for Monero? You're the first Monero guy I think we've had on the show. We've had a lot of people on the show.
We haven't.
I'm coming to the radar like that, you know. I come in.
Boom, boom. Listen, Monero. If you're here, Mark, you may as well tell us why you think it's a good idea, and we'll take a lot of shit from people, I guess, in the chat and afterward when we release this. But okay, let's hear why you want it.
Very simple. It's a concept called fungibility. Every unit needs to be equal to every other unit. In the case of Bitcoin, every unit has a unique history, therefore it's not fungible. Monero works to fix that. I don't think mixing is a good solution. I think every me personally, this is not me speaking as the store, the CoinCheck, me personally. I don't think mixing is a good solution. I think every transaction needs to be private by default, or else if you're the only one mixing, you stand out of the crowd. Like you stand out even though you're trying to blend in.
So we had, wait a minute. We had Mark Binns on, who runs Big Digital Assets and has what he says is a tool that can break down the privacy heuristics of Monero. And he's not the only one who says this. There's a number of other people who run analytics firms and whatnot that say they have this capability. Do you think they have that capability, or do you think it's a bluff, it's a marketing tool? You're starting to hear it more and more. I'm not saying it's like, you know, becoming a deafening sound.
It's fair points. I need to see what data points they're having. Because definitely if you're pulling in data from multiple exchanges, for example, and you see that, oh, this guy over here withdrew Monero using this person's exchange address, or this person withdrew this amount of Monero, and then immediately that amount of Monero was deposited an hour later into this exchange. As long as you can control two endpoints like that, you can do some heuristics, I believe. But I don't think, and I haven't seen any proof of like on-chain heuristics, of any on-chain tracing of Monero, and certainly no arrests or anything like that.
So I can't speak much on Monero because I don't know. I know what it is, but the technicals, I have no clue. But I just want to touch back on a point you made, that you were saying that the transaction should be anonymous. You shouldn't be able to track it. But if you're going to have KYC that's being implemented and forced upon by governments, it's virtually impossible to have Bitcoin that is going to be mostly that's untraceable. You're going to have a lot.
Yes and no. I mean, KYC is the enemy, don't get me wrong, but KYC is not like, you should not give up the opportunity to buy Bitcoin to avoid KYC, because the cost in the long run will be much greater than you're missing out on Bitcoin if you're not buying Bitcoin, is my point. So, and once you buy in, all the government knows, or all me, the exchange knows, is that you bought in. That's it. In the case of Bitcoin, with chain analysis, I can figure out what you did with it, but you can mix it, you can do other things. And that's the important thing, is what you do with it after you buy it is what matters. In the same way that when I walk into a bank, I can take cash out of the bank and I can immediately walk across the street and buy drugs or whatever it is I'm buying. And the bank can see that with their own eyes because I just walked across the street. But if I just walk around the corner, or if I just walk away from their eyesight, now they have no idea what I've done with the cash. They know I have the cash, but they don't know what I've done with it. They don't know if I have it tomorrow, if they don't know if I have it the next day, yada, yada, yada. And I think that's
where Lightning could actually if you do extensive analysis, you could then find out where money is going to, but you'd have to sink in a lot of time and effort to really do the analysis. But for the most part, it's very, very difficult to find out where money is being spent on Lightning, and especially if you have channels that get money and receive money, if you do a lot of buying and selling, it's very, very difficult at that point. And then it's being anonymous on Lightning is definitely its possibility. So I'm just pumping up Lightning as a possible solution.
I admit I'm Lightning ignorant as well. I've only used Lightning very, very few times in my life. And all times it was a little difficult, but I know nowadays it's much easier. But I'm just a little ignorant to it.
So Mark, you like Monero. You guys don't sell it. I mean, I know you don't, but I guess why not? A few exchanges do or did.
That's because I unfortunately have business partners who are like, yeah, we don't want to get in trouble with the government or piss off our bank. So we're not selling Monero. They're like foot down. Once we're starting the business, they're like, yeah, just so you know, Mark, we're not going to sell Monero.
Is it hard to sell it? Apart from the sort of unfortunate tendencies of your business partners, is it it's not difficult to sell or anything like that?
No, there's no legalities around it other than that are no different than Bitcoin.
And the government doesn't view it on it like negatively in such a way that maybe
right now no one views it differently. Like Kraken, who is a Canadian exchange, has had Monero for the longest time. I think one other Canadian exchange too has Monero. I can't remember
which Newton one. Had it. I think Newton did sell XMR for a while. I'm pretty sure if memory serves. Yeah, they got rid of it, I think, last summer or the summer before.
Disappointing. But that was not due to regulatory pressure then.
It must have been. But no, what else could it have been?
Maybe their bank was pressuring them or something, but it definitely didn't come from pressure from the government.
That's regulatory. The bank doesn't pressure
that's
people.
Fair. You could
the
say
bank
that.
Gets pressured and carry and is a transmission channel for our friends that
No. The banks are way on more on edge than the government is, because the banks are afraid of the government.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. You know,
because the banks are afraid of the government, they go way overboard.
Oh.
So they take government regulations and multiply them by 10 because they're like, bro, if we ever break these regulations, we're screwed. So they're on it.
But so we got a guy in the chat, Ruxan, who comes to the stream once in a while here. Can you at least admit, Mark, as a Monero maximalist, that it's not the best store of value, that Bitcoin is the best store of value? Just say it, Mark. Just say it.
Bitcoin is a good store of value.
I would be very careful with all this talk.
Gold is a better store of value. Is that a
no? What's going on? We didn't bet this guy at all. What is going on here?
Gold has thousands of years of store of value behind it.
I think it's been bloody awful since the advent of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin's look. I'll admit that I think Bitcoin is doing well in this fight, but it's got an uphill battle yet. For sure. Lindy is real, man. And gold
yeah,
has
100% Lindy's real. I agree with that. But yeah. Going up in value is not a store of value. Remember that. Mm.
Talk about that. Give me a little bit on that.
A store of value means I can buy tomorrow what I could buy today. Mm. But if I can't predict what I can buy tomorrow, i.e. it could double in price, i.e. drop 20% in price, that to me is not a very good store of value. But in over time, as Bitcoin grows, as the market cap grows, Bitcoin will 100% become a store of value.
That's fair.
I like it. Yeah. There's a lot more support for Monero in this chat right now than I thought there would be. Like,
I know.
We didn't vet the guests. We're not vetting the listeners either. I don't know what's going on.
And we're never going to become the Canadian
Monero
guys.
They're quiet about it. Everyone sees that privacy is a big deal and they're waking up.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Mark, do you have any more questions, Len?
I was just going to make a comment between all this talk about Bitcoin and Monero and the banks too. Just be very careful next time you start your car. Make sure you do a walk around and everything. You're making a lot of enemies here. So these guys, they don't play, they play dirty. They play tough games. So just be very careful.
I'm going to be waiting across the street in a trench coat for them.
Oh, no. I'll make sure I'll send Vito by your way and make sure you get some special protection.
This week or so. Don't worry.
Yeah, Mark, you've been a killer guest, man. We always ask the same question of our guests at the end of these interviews. It's not about Bitcoin. It's not about Monero. It's not about any of that shit. It's about your foot speed. So you got two business partners here. I'm looking on your website right now. I would assume these guys are friends of yours at the very least, if not, they're colleagues. Hamad Ismail, Yaqub Jamal. Do I have that pronunciation right?
Yep.
Okay. And you, Mark Sinclair, are in a parking lot. Okay. It's paved. It's, I don't know. It's like 25 degrees. It's orchid weather, 72 and sunny. And 40 yards from you guys, there's a finish line. Nice checkered flag there, okay? Who's winning a foot race between the three of you guys and by how much?
Like a physical foot race?
Yeah.
Physical foot race.
Oh, man. It's not Meadowland race. This is actually real.
It's real. Not a metaverse race. That's right.
I'd probably win it, but Jamal might surprise me and win it. I work out. I swim. But Jamal's just so good at everything he does that he might just surprise me. And like, I'd be cruising along being like, I got this, no problem. And then right at the last second, he'd sneak past me.
That's we don't have a definitive answer though.
That's one of the most honest answers we've had. Most of the time, it's about just crushing other people or being crushed. So good. We like that. Okay, Mark, tell people where they can find out about you, the Coin Shack, all that stuff. The floor is yours, man.
You can find me on Twitter at L What's His Face. You can find me in my store, mostly Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays. I'm usually there. Go to coinshack.ca for all information on that. Anything else, just send me a DM on Twitter.
And the address of the store?
4132 Bathurst Street, Toronto, Ontario.
Very close to Yorkdale.
Yes.
Hi. Yeah.
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 Who goes to malls? Not me. Mark Sinclair, COO, the Coin Shack. God bless everyone. Mark, you killed it. We'll talk to everybody very soon. Don't leave yet, Mark. We'll talk after the show for a second here. But everyone else, God bless. Take care.
Take care.
Way to go. Good.